Are we close enough or? All right, let's go ahead and start. So welcome, day three of Build. This is where you would have been eating lunch yesterday. So I appreciate all the growling stomachs and sitting through another talk. I know this is drinking from a fire hose. There's a lot of information that is being given out. A lot of sessions to choose from. Thankfully, these are all being recorded and you can watch them later when you're not just exploding from all the new info. Today we're going to talk about extending the user interface. And we're going to be specific with Windows 8, XAML, and HTML. We're going to build a silly little control that has no business value whatsoever. And I do that on purpose. I've been speaking for about 10 years, and I used to do things like, you know, have a little banking app or things like that. And somebody in the audience always works in that domain and goes, Phil, you're doing it wrong. That's not how we do it in the banking business. And it's like, that's not the point. So I like using lots of cartoons and movie references, things like that. We're going to build a clock today. And because nobody likes watching me type, we're going to do the Julia Childs thing. Wait a minute, younger crowd. The Rachel Ray thing. And we're going to pull out different phases of completed casseroles as we go through. But all the code's available for you, or will be available for you to look at. I'm not sure the process for that yet, but I'll make sure it is available, at least on my blog, so you can download it. The slides you can get from certainly the Channel 9 website. So who am I? My name's Phil Japixi. I am the senior, well, I'm actually, my title's changed since then. I'm the evangelism lead for the DevTools division for Telerik. You might have heard of us, kind of make controls. So this kind of fits right in my wheelhouse to do this. I am a Microsoft MVP. I'm an MC star.star. If anybody remembers DOS, I've just taken a lot of the Microsoft certification exams. I've got some Agile certifications as well. I hail from Cincinnati, Ohio. So if you live out here on the coast, yes, that's flyover country. Right? I've accepted that. So what's the agenda? Well, first of all, why should you care? Obviously, you care a little bit because you came here to this talk. Or the other ones were full and you wanted to sit down somewhere. Either way, your butt's in these seats. I'll try and motivate you a little bit about why you should do this talk or be in here. We're going to talk about properties and events and how to consume those. And you say, well, that's pretty basic coding. It is. But when you're wrapping something up for distribution to give to somebody else on your team or to deploy through NuGet or v6 packages, we'll get to at the end of the deck, you got to think a little more about how people will use your control. It's not just you consuming it. We're going to talk about how to make it toolable. Doesn't do any good if it doesn't work with Visual Studio or Blend. Right? We don't want to have to do all this, you know, look up a bunch of help documentation, not be able to see IntelliSense and things like that. We're going to talk about how we distribute it, and then, of course, the obligatory resources page. And I got to push, it's PHHD, push hard here, dummy, is what it really should say. Windows 8 has a very unique personality. And what I mean by that is Microsoft has really changed the paradigm for building applications when it comes to Windows 8. When they first started looking at Windows 8, I was fortunate enough to be in one of the initial train-to-trainer sessions out in Redmond several years ago, and they took a bunch of focus groups and said, draw a picture of what Windows looks like to you. And what did they draw? They drew the big window with an X and a little square and a dash, and then some other windows and things like that. And what they drew was Chrome. Stuff that doesn't really portray any information, but it's the chair rail, it's the door handle, it's those types of things that really get in the way of seeing what the application is about. And the personality of Windows is content over Chrome. What do people care about? Why are they looking at your app? And what we want to do when we extend the user interface is we want to make sure that your corporate personality or your game or whatever you're writing, mostly this talks about enterprise because we're talking about making custom controls, is conveyed in that personality. It's optimized for touch first, but it works with a keyboard and mouse. And we want to make sure that controls are independently animated. We want to make sure that at the control level, we can turn those things on and off. A very big concern for people using mobile devices is what? Battery life, right? So when I first got my Windows phone, I had every tile be a live tile. I had my start screen was about this long. Why? Because it was cool, right? And then my battery life lasted about, I don't know, 20 minutes. So I've started disabling what I want to have be live tiles. So you want to make sure they're independently animated so that you give the users that finite control. PHHD. PHHHHD. There we go. Windows comes with some very nice controls out of the box. You can use these right away. Whether you're in the XAML world or the HTML JavaScript world, they should be comforting to work with, especially if you're coming from a XAML background. They work very similar to what you experienced in WPF and Windows Phone. If you're coming from an HTML background and you've used frameworks like Knockout, Angular, things like that, it's also very similar there with the data when options, the data when bind, and the data when control tags. So these are just some, you know, random controls that you can use. Of course, we have data views. We want to show data. We want to push this thing really hard. There we go, plain transition. And of course, we ship with the Windows ships with the list view, the grid view, and the flip view. So what is the personality of your application? It needs to be data-centric, right? Content over Chrome. Then we want to make sure that we can show that data in an easy-to-navigate way. I had somebody stop by the booth earlier today, and they were kind of complaining that the grid view only scrolled one direction or the other. And I said, do you have a tablet? And he said, no. So I let him pick up one of our RTs, and I said, all right, hold it in your hands and try and scroll both ways. It was, if we were build the apps like that, it's very reminiscent of how mobile phones were when they first started having browser support. You remember how I'm talking about, right? You saw one section of the page at a time, and you had to scroll left and right and up and down, and hopefully eventually, it's like Battleship, right? Eventually you get to D9 and you see the section of the page you wanted to see. So we got to keep the design guidelines in mind when we do this. So why should we extend the platform? Well, there's some very good reasons, but mostly we want to make sure that we make it very easy, or you make it very easy for your organization, your team of developers, to add your unique personality to your application. There are, and I forget the number, I'm going to say it wrong, and 80% of all statistics are made up anyway, but there's 200,000 apps in the store? Let's pretend there's 200,000 apps in the store. I don't remember the number. They didn't set it in the keynote, and I've already forgotten. What makes your app different from anybody else's app? Right? It's going to be your app's personality. You want to make sure that you really make it pop to the user and also make it very, very usable. The new radio menus that you see in OneNote, very popular feature, make it very easy to use. Some of the other mapping things. Now, there are other ways to extend the platform. The easiest and most shareable way is to extend the UI platform through custom controls. And that's what we're going to talk about. Now, why would you want to make a custom control? Well, I've long been a proponent that if you write something once, you should encapsulate it. If you write the same thing twice, you have to encapsulate it. If you write the same thing three times, please stop programming. Because repetitive code is just a breeding ground. It's a petri dish for bugs. And if I'm making the exact same user interface on multiple places in my application, and I don't encapsulate that in a custom control, I'm going to introduce a bug because I'm going to have a change request or a feature request or a bug report, and I'm going to go in and I'm going to find the one instance of where I know this code is written and change it, but I didn't change the others. So we're rewriting instead of reusing logic. Promote reuse. Again, I want to make it to happy hour, soccer game, whatever it is after work. If I can reuse code with my organization that I know that it works, then that's a big win for me. Right? What's the biggest testing framework in use today? Anyone? What's the most popular? Production. Right? If you've got something that's working in production, reuse it because they've tested it. Users will find that one way that no developer thought they would ever click on, and they will click on that thing. Right? So if you've got it working in production, reuse it. What's the easiest way to reuse it? Encapsulate it. It makes us more consistent. It's like using CSS styles or XAML styles instead of inline coloring. Right? It makes the whole application consistent. And consistency is what we really want. Otherwise, it's kind of a jarring experience for our customers. It also, by default, increases the quality. We know it works here. We're going to use the same thing here. It will work the exact same way here. Believe it or not, computers will always behave the same way given the same inputs. And then you start reducing the amount of "it works on my machine" that you might hear. You're going to release faster? That's a given. If I can go through quality checks quicker, if I can reuse user interface and logic and code quicker, and I'm coding less, I'm going to get more out faster. And like I said, you get home on time for whatever that motivation is. So how do you create a custom control? Well, it's as easy as, it's got to be easier than using this mouse. What do I need to point at? This is weird. There we go. I think I'm just too far away. So it's easy as 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, right? Create a user interface. And we're going to talk about, there's some interesting things we have to consider in both XAML and HTML JavaScript when we do that for Windows 8. Add your properties, methods, and events. Add IntelliSense metadata. IntelliSense is so much better than code comments. I don't want to have to debug, step into code, decompile code just to see what this thing does. Even if you're only using it yourself, you should think about adding IntelliSense. Look at it this way. Imagine that the next person looking at your code is an axe-wielding psychopath. Right? And I'm not the first person to come up with that quote. I just can't remember who, so I can't attribute him to it. But if your code is not very well written or usable or friendly, then you're going to have somebody angry. Now, take that and think about this. Who's the most likely person to look at your code 6 months from the time you wrote it? You are. Absolutely. How many times have you gotten code, looked at it, and go, "Who wrote this?" And then you go into TFS and see who checked it, and you go, "Never mind, false alarm." Right? I was just joking. It's really cool. Make it toolable. Make it so it's very easy for the developers to use Blend, your control, and Blend in Visual Studio. Drag and drop support. I want to drag it from the toolbar into my XAML grid. In Blend, I want to see all the properties in the property grid for the data win options. It's vital to make this thing usable. If it's not usable, what's going to happen? If it's hard to use, as developers, what do? We ignore it, right? And then we make it ourselves, because we're smarter than everybody else, so we're going to do it better. And find a way to ship it. There we go. It's too far away. It's a distance thing. All right, how do you create a control assembly in XAML? Now we have, I think it was about 50-50 of the people doing Windows 8 development were XAML versus HTML. And the other people were just looking for a seat because the other rooms were full, which is totally fine. But you start with a class library, and you have to set this little undocumented property in your project XML. It's called Generate Library Layout. Now, you can't do this through Visual Studio. You have to, open in Windows Explorer, edit with, Notepad or whatever your favorite editor is, and you add that tag, and I'll show you details in a minute. What that does is when you compile it, creates the directory structure you will need down the road to ship it as a V6 package. Add your themes, but before you do that, you want to right-click and say Add Templated Control. That's a special type that you can add to a Windows 8 XAML project. And this exposes what your user will need to attach templates for look and feel, so you don't have to code all that infrastructure. And then write your control. Draw it. Do whatever you want to do. You have to have a no-arg constructor, though. So even though I'm a big fan of Solid and dependency inversion, you have to have a no-arg constructor in a managed code XAML project in order for it to work in Blend and Visual Studio. So what does that do? Well, this is how we make a pointer. So generate library layout, set it to true. This is just another property group, and then that will create another folder under debug or release, the name of your project, and all your themes. You will need these when we create the V6 package. It's simpler in HTML and JavaScript. And one of the reasons it's simpler, for those of you who've been playing with WinJS, how many of you have read Douglas Crawford's book, JavaScript, The Good Parts? In the end of the book, I'm paraphrasing, I don't remember the name of the appendices, but one of the appendices is JavaScript, The Bad Parts, and the other one's JavaScript, The Really Bad Parts. The WinJS team has done an awesome job of fixing a lot of those bad parts, and we're going to leverage most of them today. So you start with a JavaScript file. You don't have to have a whole project, just a file. And then you add a WinJS namespace and a WinJS class. Your constructor for the class needs to have element. It doesn't have to be called element, but it needs to take an element as its first parameter. And then we render the control. Now, in this particular example, I'm using a canvas because it's UI focused, right? We're building a clock. Not very exciting, but it shows the example well. So how do we do that? Well, we start with the self-executing function, as we do all JavaScript files in WinJS HTML, right? WinJS namespace, define whatever your namespace is, and then you have a class in there where I pass in an element. Now, this is very important. If it's created in code, without them whoever's programming, and that's what I mean by user, user of your control, without specifying an element, it has to have an element to attach to. This is the same thing when we have a div tag and we say datawin class or datawin control, and we would put in samples.ui.clockControl.html.ui, that element gets passed in to the constructor. In the code behind, we also do that, and I'm going to show you that down the road. And then if the element's null, we just create a div tag, and we just assign it to it. And then you can do whatever sort of display you want. The recommendation, of course, is to use CSS styles in a CSS class file. To make the demo simple, I just made inline block, and then we draw it. So doing a quick demo, and I am on 5. So there it is. Woo! A clock. That was exciting. Doesn't do anything. It's not animated in any way, shape, or form. Let me fire up the HTML version of it. And it's going to look amazingly like the exact same thing. There we go. Woo! Exciting, right? When we look at the code, let's look at the files that created when we built it because we made those changes. Yep, everybody can see that. So it creates a DLL. Oh, I'm going to get some love over here. A DLL, debug file, a .py file, and then in that other folder is where the styles go. So we're going to need that when we move on. So there's nothing exciting in the code about creating the circle and the hands. So I'm not really going to show much of that. But let's talk about how we do properties. Now, properties are very important because, well, I've done a lot of control creation in my past. I don't work on the dev teams for the Telerik controls because those guys are way smarter than me. But when I've done custom controls in the past, the problem that I have is one of analysis paralysis. Right? I know what I need, but then I start thinking, well, somebody might need this someday. Somebody might need this someday. And you keep expanding this thing until it's a behemoth and you can never release it. So when you're looking at the properties and the events and those types of things you add in, I'm a big fan of YAGNI. You guys know what YAGNI means? You ain't gonna need it. So get your release out the door. What did you need to implement your control in your application to show off your personality? And that's what you code. You will probably get requests for more functionality. That's fine. Don't build it all up front. It'll just be a nightmare to support. So for those of you doing XAML, this should be old hat to you. We add dependency properties if we want to make it a stylable property. For example, I can change the color of my clock. That is a dependency property. Because then I can use styles in my consuming application to change what it looks like. Or you just use standard .NET getters and setters. It's very important to set defaults. And the reason we want to set defaults is for a better design time experience. If I have default height and width and color, when they drag it over onto the canvas or into the designer and they look at it in Blend, you'll actually see something. If you don't have any defaults, it gets a little wonky. Wonky, of course, is a technical term. When you consume them, if you've done it this way, you can, in XAML, you can consume those properties through markup or code. So here I have the clock fill brush. Now, one thing about my examples, I'm terrible at naming things. I'm a geek through and through, I admit. So my names are not creative. But I have the clock fill brush. It's a dependency property because I want to be able to set it in XAML. When you have a dependency property, you also have to make a standard.NET property that wraps up the dependency property. This shouldn't be new to you if you've made properties on your XAML. If it is new to you, this is what you have to do. So that's not new anymore. When we consume those, it really is this simple. I now have a dependency property. I can, in my markup, just say the clock fill brush should be gray. And here I'm setting defaults in the constructor. Remember, no arg constructor is required. So I just set the defaults. It's not as easy on the HTML WinJS side. It's funny, you know, we can work as developers, and I'm sure you know this, we can work for months on something trying to figure it out. We figure it out, we show it to our coworkers, and they say, oh, that's great, how'd you do it? What is our first response? It was easy, right? Well, it's easy now, you know it. So it takes a little more research, if you will, or using my slides, to do it in WinJS. We have to add an options parameter to the constructor for that WinJS class that we built. We can do two things then. We can call winjs.ui.setOptions, which is very much like model binding. in MVC, if you're familiar with that, or the new web forms model binding, where it just says, all right, here's my options parameter that came in. I'm going to look through it. And every property that's in there, if there's a property on my control, I'll set that option. So it's a very nice shortcut. The properties have to be instance methods in the class. When you change the property, you have to call out to make it redraw itself. It doesn't wake up like some of the other things that we would expect. And the order of processing is key. What do I mean by that? If I call set options, I can't control the order that those options are set. And if a property refers to another property that hasn't been set yet, you'll get a very, very cryptic error. Something like, your code doesn't work. It's that descriptive. I ran into it the hard way. And then, of course, consuming it is pretty straightforward through markup or code. So here we're going to add some properties. We'll get some love over here. I've added the options parameter on the constructor that's required. If it's null, I just set it to empty. I call set options. And then here is my getter and setter. I can't use straight fields. Won't work. Really got to use getters and setters. And then I just say, oh, it changed. Draw myself. So again, not rocket science, but it's not rocket science to me because I've been doing it for a while. So if you're new to this, just some things to watch out for. When you consume them, it's just as easy as it is in XAML. I can consume them through markup, through the data when options tag, or I can consume them through code. Love the corporate timeout. All right, so let's look at properties, and I have just a little flyout, nice little thing that you have. We have in WinJS, you don't have in XAML yet. I believe they're in 8.1, though. And I want to change the color to, I don't know, red. Right, how does that work behind the scenes? It's super easy. Again, because I've been doing it for a while, right? How'd you do that? Ah, it's easy. So I have just a div here where I have a clock, and then I have a div where I actually, or will put a clock, and then I have a div here where I've actually instantiated and set the colors. When I look at the code behind, right, I can create a new clock in code. I'm passing in the options. If I don't pass them in, it'll use the defaults. Again, it's important to set those defaults. And here's the element I want to wrap. Now, if you're doing WinJS, and you're looking at this, and you're going, wait a minute, he's not doing document.getElementById. You don't have to. This is an IE10 browser quirk. And it's my favorite browser quirk. Anything that has an ID attribute set in HTML will automatically be added to the global namespace. So I can reference it as a straight up property or variable name. So I don't have to call it document.getElementById, quote, my clock, end quote. I just want to call that out because sometimes people look at this code and go, well, what is my clock? So it's a nice little browser quirk you can use. And then, if I want to change the color of the control, again, it is a control, it's a WinJS control that I have built. So I have the clock control props div, that is my div tag that holds my clock. I have to reference it through .winControl, and then I get .color equals the color that I set it to. So it works very much the same way in XAML. We can look at that real quick. So here's my new clock. passing in the defaults, or not the defaults, but what I want it to be set to. I then can set a new solid color brush, right, the XAML property to colors.black. Where in JavaScript, we can just type in a string. We actually have to use the XAML controls in XAML. And to see what that looks like, it just changes the color. All right, that's fine. I have a clock that doesn't do anything. It's kind of boring. I actually want this thing to be alive, to be responsive, to convey my personality of my application. In XAML and C#, you can do two things. First of all, you can use standard .NET events, if you're familiar with those. But in my dependency properties, I can also add a property change callback so that when that dependency property changes, it automatically calls back into itself. Now, this is not an external event. This is an internal way of me not having to remember to call redraw myself every time something changes. Again, you can consume these through markup or the code behind or the standard event handlers in C#. So here's my dependency property for isRunning. If that value changes, then I want it to call back into onIsRunning changed. And here is where I actually turn on or off the clock. So I can set the property through markup, I can set the property through code, and it'll stop the clock from running without me having to then call stop. You can also use standard events. Here I have just a regular event handler. And there it is. So I have clock event args. I just created event args. When did this change happen? And then when I raise the event, I just standard .NET code. Nothing real exciting there. To consume them, I can do it in markup, right? And Visual Studio is great at helping you with that, right? You can set that, hit enter. It'll build a new event handler in the code behind for you if you're in a XAML project. I can also assign them in code through the plus equals, just assigning the method that will handle that event. And then my event args give me the time of when the event fired. HTML WinJS, it's a little more involved, not if you've been doing this for a while, but we start now bringing in something called mixins. How many of you are familiar with the concept of mixins? A couple of you? So imagine you've made, it's Saturday morning in the Gypixie household, and it is waffle day. Kids ask for daddy waffles when I'm home from traveling, so I'm making waffles, and sometimes I'll add food coloring, other things. I'll add these mix-ins into the waffle mix. Now, I haven't taken anything out, because you can't really, right? This is modification through extension, but I've added something in. This is what we're doing with the mix-in. We have our class that already has some properties, and we're mixing in additional properties and attributes and things to it. This is how you make bindable classes as well. You mix in the bindable mix in. I just said mix in like 7 times in a row, so I know that's a little fuzzy. The two that we want to add in is the DOM event mix in. This allows our controller to respond to events happening on the DOM, the document object model. And then the next one is where we create event properties. And this is where we tell our control what events it will have. And then consuming it's super easy. You just myControl.addEventListener, and we've bound a function, whether it's anonymous or named, to that control. So I've cut out a bunch of code here. We've already seen how we instantiate it. I am now going to, this is the other thing, is we have to call dispatch event. This is what raises the event. This is just the JavaScript equivalent, so if you're familiar with it, that should be nothing new. And I can create, I don't have to create event args, because JavaScript's dynamic. So I say a property of when with the value of now, and then every 5 seconds, I dispatch the 5 seconds event. Those are defined here in the mix. So here's first parameter to the mix in, or to the mix function, is the thing you are wanting to extend the properties to. In this case, it's our events class. I then mix in the DOM event mix in. That makes it enable. It enables it to have events. And then we specify the event properties. And here I just have the tick and the 5 seconds events. Consuming them is super easy. If you're used to JavaScript, I just add an event listener. And then the parameter that comes into the events, by convention we usually call that E, has the details that we passed in that anonymous object that we created. So what does this look like in code? I'd love to reset that timeout. So I just have a clock. Every second it updates the UI. Every 5 seconds it updates the second line. Every 10 seconds updates the third line. I can also stop it from running. And all I'm doing is setting the isRunning property to false. And then the callback fires to change how it works internally. And I can start it running again. And you say, Phil, that's really boring. Yes, it is. That is the idea, because I want to show the concepts and not get people muddied in the waters of how I implemented a very simple clock. So let's stop that one, and let's look at the code. Now, you saw most of the code already. So just to highlight a couple things. I can actually here set isRunning to false. It's a dependency property. I can set it to false. It will make sure it's not running. The way I change the way it works in code is very simple. Get past all the navigation. I just change isRunning from true to false. That starts it and stops it. When we look at the HTML version, that's something also worth pointing out. If you look at my Solution Explorer here, I have a different JavaScript file for each of these demos that I'm showing. So I am iterating through building this control all in the same project. In XAML, it's a little more involved. Remember, we have to create a project and then a template of the control. So I actually have a separate project that I'm referencing for each of these iterations. Some of the dynamic nature of JavaScript makes it able for us to do it all in one place. Just because we can do it all in one place doesn't necessarily mean we should do it all in one place. So, of course, temper your actions with wisdom. So here I've added an event listener. So every time the tick fires, I call this function that just sends the document.getElementById tick element, or just tick for short, enter text to be the detail of when this thing fired. If we actually look at the clock control itself, two things of note here at the bottom. I've got the mix in. The mix in is outside of the class declaration body. That's someplace I've been burned. Just wanted to call that out. And then when I want to fire off the event, all I have to call is dispatch event. And I can do that because of that mix-in. Do I have any questions at this point? Okay, good. Let's talk about IntelliSense. IntelliSense in managed code is easy. We should all know how to do this. Triple swack comments. Visual Studio is very nice. You add the swack, swack, swack. It actually stubs out the IntelliSense comments for you. When you compile it, reference that thing, it'll show up in IntelliSense. The thing that you have to watch out for in the XAML world is if you are using dependency properties, you add the IntelliSense to the CLR or the standard.NET property that wraps the dependency property. If you put it on a dependency property, it'll never show up. WinJS, same theory, triple swack. Tooling isn't as nice as it is in the XAML world. Here's the catch. It's really sensitive to where you put these things. You can comment your entire class in the constructor if it's the first thing in the constructor. No other comments, no other code, no nothing. I can stack all of my IntelliSense in the constructor, but if I put something in there like a standard JavaScript comment, it will break IntelliSense. I can also put them right above my getters and setters, which is what we recommend. And there's a whole bunch of really quirky rules about it. There's a long URL. On the references slide at the end, I have a short URL. So we have a dependency property up here. Remember, we have to put the comments on the actual CLR property. And again, I'm not very creative, but the summary, this is what will show up in IntelliSense in code. Doesn't show up in markup, it only shows up in code. We still have a summary tag. On the constructor, we have a param tag. I suggest you use this. It really helps new developers who are using WinJS controls to understand how to use these in code. And then we have fields. And you said, you're thinking, well, Phil, you said don't use fields, use getters and setters and properties. Yes, I did, but for whatever reason, in IntelliSense, it's a field. And we can either add those in the constructor or we can add them deeper down. All right, let me actually stop these so I can get into the editor. So here's my clock event control in XAML, and I can go down and I can say 5 seconds elapsed, so you see that my events are all in IntelliSense. I know it's kind of tiny, but it's there. And then I can use the standard.NET, right, create my new event. JavaScript, we can do the same thing. Although there's a catch. IntelliSense will work on this line where I am creating a new custom control in code. I now have a variable that points to it. I'm off to the races. IntelliSense works fine. If I create it in markup, for example, this control, let me just move this up here. So here's a clock control that I created in markup. .WinControl gets me actually the WinJS control, and I try and use IntelliSense. I get the very standard, I don't know what the heck I'm supposed to do dialogue.
However, with things that we create in code, if I could type, we actually get true IntelliSense. Now, I went round and round with a lot of people on this. Unfortunately, it's a limitation we have right now. I have not tried this in 2013. Maybe it's fixed, maybe it's not. I don't know. I'm using 2012 Update 2 right now. Do you guys know that the quarterly update, the third quarterly update, came out the day before yesterday? You guys aware of that? And I didn't install it. I have a kind of a little paranoia about installing brand new updates 2 days before a major talk, so I don't know what's in the next update. When we look at the scripts, if I were to do this, let's say I've added in a regular JavaScript comment, foo, save that, and I go back into the code. Oh, it's cached. I didn't build it. All right, I lied. It's cached is the problem, which is, well, it's not a problem. It's good, right, that it cached it? But it's fairly sensitive. So we want to make sure that we don't do that. Now, I have the constructor, and this is kind of convention over configuration because I could put everything here in the constructor. But I actually tried to follow more of a .NET paradigm or a managed code paradigm where I go down above each of the fields and add the triple swat comments as well. Works both ways. I think this is more readable. Your mileage will vary. Feel free to do it however you prefer. When we actually look at the final clock control class here, you can see it's just standard triple swat comments that I've added. All right, now we have a control. It's got properties, it's got events. We know how to consume them, we know how to fire them off. We know how to draw it. We know how to document it. How do we get into Visual Studio? Or Blend? Yeah. So the question is, will this work in C++ as well? And the answer is, it depends, unfortunately. So a lot of this will work in C++. Unfortunately, I have not done any C++ work in Windows 8. In fact, I did it before I had gray hair, so it's been a while. A lot of this will translate into C++, but not every part of it. Unfortunately, I don't know where the lines are. But good question. So why do we want to make it toolable? Well, we want to make it easy for people to use. I want to be able to just open up my toolbox in Visual Studio, in Blend, and have access to these controls. I don't want to have to sneakernet them to my development team. You guys remember sneakernet, right? Put it on a floppy disk and put your sneakers on and bring it over to somebody else? Yeah, I'm showing my age. How many of you saw Jason Olson's talk this morning at 9 a.m.? 9 a.m. was really early if you went to the party, I understand. I was in his talk along with Mark Miller from DevExpress, and he went through the whole process of how to build a Visual Studio installer package, a V6 package. It's a great talk. You should catch it when it comes available online. It goes into much more detail than I can do here. I have 11 minutes left. But at the end of the day, we want to make it easy for people to use our controls, whether that's a private NuGet store within your organization, or whether it's just a file you have, a V6 package that you have in source control, TFS, subversion, Git, whatever, that people can get into their Visual Studio instance, or if you've got a really friendly IT pro department, they can actually push this out through System Center and have it update. So you have to create the right files in the metadata package. There is an SDK manifest. Then you add the DLL, the PRI, and the themes. Now remember back in the beginning of this talk, I said if you're in XAML and you want to make this into a package, you have to add that special property group into your project file. This is what enables this to be very easy. We add that property group. You then have to put it in the Windows. This is if you're not doing a V6 package. If you just want to have this thing show up, you can copy it manually. Not recommended, but it's possible. Maybe you're just testing. Into the program files, x86, Microsoft SDKs, Windows V8 extensions SDKs. And there's probably now a V8.1 if you install the 8.1 preview. The manual part of it is what we want to fix with the V6 package. To do it with HTML and JavaScript, it's kind of the same, but vastly different. And what I mean by kind of the same is we're still creating a zip package that we want to put into that directory. But in addition to the SDK manifest, we have to use the open Ajax file as well as the open Ajax metadata specification. So metadata and widget specifications. And these are these two files here where it's my namespace, samples.ui_API_oam.xaml, and we'll look at these if we have time. UI control name_oam.xml, and then you can copy it out. If you don't use the getter setter paradigm in Blend, in your JavaScript control, Blend will not be able to pull those options up in the property tab. So you gotta use getters and setters if you wanna make this thing work really well with Blend. So what does that look like? Somebody's finishing early. Now I feel like I got a rush. Did it not switch? Oh, it did switch. So here's our V6 package, and Jason did an awesome job of going into all the nitty-gritty details of how this works. But let's look at the manifest right here. Boom. Here are the assets. You notice I have the PRI file, the themes.genericXAML, which I got out of that created directory, as well as the DOL. Then I can build this V6 package. It has to be a production build. And then I can install it, or I can run it in the test bed as well. JavaScript, on one hand, it's easy. On the other hand, it's not as easy. I don't actually have it in, you don't actually put it into a project. Now, I can eventually, but I have to make my V6 package outside of the project. Samples UI, I zip it up, but let's look at these files. There's the manifest. Let's go down into a long path. Keep going. It's kind of a pain. So my suggestion to you is leverage somewhere where you have an example of a custom control that you can distribute through JavaScript. And if only you knew somebody who was talking about that at build and had sample source code available. Oh, wait, that's me. Use my code. Use it as a starting point if you're building a JavaScript custom control. And I say that freely because I got this from Veli, one of my developers at Telerik, and he gave it to me. So please pass it on. It's a lot easier than reading through the whole specification. Once I do that, I just navigate to that big hairy path. And if you look at the samples.zip file, it mirrors the path that you have to create in that directory. To create a V6 package, you have to install the Visual Studio SDK. And again, Jason did a great job explaining that, so please go back and watch his session when it becomes available. The caveat here is make sure you build in release mode. This is XAML only. In WinJS, it doesn't matter how you build it because you're not really building it, right? You're just packaging up a zip that you put into the V6. So resources, I'll give you time to take a picture of this. A lot of bit.lys just to make them fit on the screen. Visual Studio SDK, that's easy enough to find. Just Bing that with your favorite Google engine. Creating a V6 package, that's MSDN documentation. The WinJS specific stuff is not Microsoft documentation. That is an open standard. So for the metadata spec, the API, and the widget, the XML documentation is on MSDN. There is my blog, schematic.com/blog. So if you want to find more information about WinJS, I write mostly about WinJS, as well as Agile and TDD and things like that. So you can certainly check out my blog. My Twitter handle is @schematic. So if you can just remember schematic, you can get a hold of me. And they say, why schematic, Phil? Well, nobody can spell or pronounce Gipixi. I volunteer for the National Ski Patrol. Before you say it, yes, we have snow in Ohio. And I'm a recently retired firefighter paramedic of 15 years, hence ski medic. Final slide. If you liked my talk, scan this code. If you didn't like my talk, scan somebody else's code. That's all I would say. Excuse me. I've got 4 minutes. Thank you so very much for coming to the talk. Hope you enjoy the rest of today. Hope you got a lot out of Build, and I hope to see you at another conference in the future. Thank you very much for coming. If you have any questions, thank you.